Welcome to the Planning Board meeting, December 17th, 2025. The time is 6:30 p.m.
I have one question.
We have to wait,
we gotta open the meeting first.
Okay. I can ask my question and leave then.
Yeah, you can.
All right, I'm gonna call the December 17th meeting of the Candia Planning Board to order. Please rise, face the flag, and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We'll do the roll call here. Judy.
Here.
Mark.
Here.
Tim, here. Brian.
Here.
Dave.
Here.
Linda.
Here.
And Kevin. Perfect. Right. First thing on the agenda, new business. Case number 25-008, major site plan and subdivision. Applicant owner, James Logan, London Bridge South, Inc., 73 Courier Road, Candia, New Hampshire. Property location, 466 and 476 High Street, Candia, New Hampshire. Map 405, lot 29 and 30. Intent, construct a 50-unit condominium-style elderly housing development. And with that, I will turn it over to the applicant and their engineer to present. Chad, you may want to just turn that in case, you know, so we don't have everybody stacked up over here. See, I'd like turn it parallel to the wall or something.
Sure.
Although Kevin may not be able to see it. But.
I can figure it out. Is that better? Or I'll try to stand on this side.
There you go.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. For the record, my name is Chad Brannon, civil engineer with Fieldstone Land Consultants, and I'll be representing London Bridge South Incorporated in Diamond Cove Holdings LLC this evening with the applications that we have before you. We have the subdivision application, site plan application, and the conditional use permit as well for this proposal to develop tax map parcel 405, 29, and 30, as you stated, Mr. Chairman. With me tonight is James Logan, who is the owner of both LLCs, and together we'll hopefully be able to address and answer the questions that the board and public may have.
I want to just put a note out here too. I wanted to do this up front. I'm going to try to limit this portion of the meeting to an hour and a half.
Okay.
We have other things in front, and really we have a kind of a policy of a two-hour meeting is long enough. So just so everybody knows, that's our target is an hour and a half.
Perfect. I only brought one bottle of water.
So there you go.
The board may recall we've been in front of you a couple of times with this development. All of those presentations were conceptual and non-binding in nature, but through the years, and it has been years, Mr. Logan has spent a lot of time putting a great deal of thought into this project and trying to really respect the land, the layout of the property, and such. And so I'm going to start just touching on some of the existing conditions. And then we'll get into some of the development details. And as I go, if there's any questions, please feel free to stop me, and we'll try to address them along the way. So the subject property or properties is situated on the south side of High Street, also known as New Hampshire Route 27.
Recording. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. And the entire area of the properties is highlighted in kind of this green color here. That we have before you on the presentation plan. The properties together consist of about 162 acres of land. There's about 1,023 linear feet of frontage along High Street. We also do have considerable frontage along Baker Road to the west. Currently, the properties are occupied by existing residential structures. You have the old, I believe it's the Stewart House, located along High Street up to the north. That's the yellow home that's you know, right up on the road. It's very much a kind of a historic structure, if you will. And then you have the existing residents here that we're actually proposing to convert into a clubhouse. So each of those structures currently exist, residential structures, and they have associated outbuildings such as barns, garages, and then accessory buildings, site improvements, driveways. There's a pool on each property, as well as, you know, obviously existing utilities and such to support each structure. The zoning for this entire property is residential, which has a 3-acre minimum requirement, 1.5 acres of contiguous usable land, has a 50-foot front setback and 25-foot side and rear setbacks. For those of you who are familiar with the property, you know just by driving along High Street that the topography generally, at least along the front side, does drain in a northerly direction towards High Street. Pretty moderate slopes. We've done a number of test pits on site, you know, to support the proposal and the development that we have before you this evening, and I'll get into that a little bit as we move on with the presentation. There are jurisdictional wetlands kind of scattered throughout the property. Within the area that we're proposing the development, they generally run from southeast to northwest. And on this plan, because we've colored everything in green, the wetlands are actually kind of in a white. And so they run, you can see them here, they bisect the area. This development is only proposing one formal wetland crossing with the construction of roads. So again, the layout has really been, you know, sensitive to the land, the natural features and such. We are proposing some improvements to some trails that will require some, you know, wetland impacts as well. And I can touch on that as we get further into the presentation as well. Those wetland areas, as you can see, they drain in that northeasterly direction, or excuse me, northwesterly direction. So ultimately, there are culverts that convey the stormwater, you know, under the highway at the end of those. And we have, you know, analyzed those culverts as part of our stormwater management plan and made sure that, you know, we're mitigating the stormwater and stuff appropriately with this development. The property is currently serviced by overhead utilities as well as on-site wells and septics. So taking a look at what we're proposing for this project, we're actually proposing a 3-lot subdivision. We're creating a lot that would go around the Stewart house in the front, and I'll actually just turn to the subdivision plan real quick. We can look at some of those details.
What page is that?
That's very front page.
That is exciting. It's SB1 is the page, which shows the kind of the detail of the front end of the site. And so if you look at SB1, you'll see that the properties as they exist today consisted of 154.927 acres, which was this property here on the western side, that's 40530. And then the existing 40529 existed here kind of centrally, and that's a 7.015 acre property. We're proposing that they be consolidated, so this is a consolidation and subdivision plan, so the properties would get consolidated, and then there would be a 3-lot subdivision. We would be creating about 155 acre property where the elderly housing project would reside, and then there would be a 3.382 acre piece that would accompany the Stewart house on the front of the project, and that would be, you know, a market rate lot. It would not be subject to any of the covenants and restrictions of the elderly housing.
Question, also, you had originally a lot on Baker. You're not doing that now.
That's what I'm going there right now.
All right,
cool. I'm flipping the page. And then if you look at the next sheet SB2, in that far north corner here, you'll see we are proposing a 3.14 acre lot on Baker Road as well. And again, the original proposal is that is a market rate lot, not subject to, you know, the restrictions of the elderly housing project. So that's the subdivision portion.
So you're gonna, it looks like, because it says existing, you're gonna do a lot line adjustment to create that, or are you actually subdividing that off?
Which page are you looking at, sir?
The frontage on Baker.
Yeah, if you look up here, it says proposed 405-30-2.
Correct, okay.
And so that's a proposed lot that we would be creating, and it would take access off of Baker Road.
So where would the access be?
Baker Road.
It would be Baker Road. So that entire left-hand side of the property.
So there's no entrance on it.
That's that landing that's up there now, right?
Yeah, I've been down there.
This is the block here now.
Right, right.
And so all of the lots here that we're proposing meet all of the minimum lot size requirements, contiguous area, you know, all of those standards. We've done test pits on the lots to verify the soils are suitable to support, you know, a future septic system. We will have to get state subdivision approval for the lots that are under 5 acres in size. So that is, you know, ultimately a recommended condition of approval, you know, that I think is outlined in the engineering review letter. So that's the subdivision portion of the project. I just wanted to touch on that.
So consolidating two lots into one and subdividing two new lots off.
That's correct. Yep. So taking a look at the, and if you want me to continue, Mr. Chairman, I can continue, or happy to answer any questions.
No, I mean, we may ask a few questions going through, but, you know, basically this is your time to inform everybody in the room of what you're doing, and then when you're done, I'll explain how we're going to move forward from here.
Sure, that sounds good. So going back to the kind of the presentation plan here, I'm going to focus on the green area. You can see the two lots that are being subdivided off. Stewart House is up here. It's not shaded in green. And that lot off of Baker Road here is not shaded in green. So that green shading is the elderly housing development now.
And so right now you've got no housing plans or anything like that on the Baker Road lot. That's just
correct.
Subdividing it off. Just
correct. Okay. Yeah. And so taking a look at the elderly housing proposal, this is actually a 48-unit elderly housing project, and then we have those two other lots. So it's 50 lots in total, but 48 units is what is being proposed for the elderly housing component.
Where are you going to have the helicopter pad?
As we, you know, take a look at the plan, the elderly housing project will include one clubhouse, as I talked about before. That's the existing residence building or structure that was on 405-29. That's located right here. And basically, all of the site amenities, the existing amenities around that house, would be preserved and really rehabbed as part of this project. So there's a pool area. There's some accessory structures, and I'll get into some of those amenities as we, you know, get further in the presentation. But the goal in the layout here was to create the clubhouse is kind of like the nucleus. It's in the center of the project. It's very accessible for pedestrian traffic. And then we tried to create, through Mr. Logan's vision, create some buffer around that and some privacy, but have the homes, you know, close so that, you know, that amenity would be, you know, kind of a focal point in and certainly well utilized by the development. So just touching on some of the amenities, we'll certainly have that, you know, that clubhouse area. There'll be amenities on the inside. We have the pool that's here will be, you know, upgraded to meet the standards that are required for that. There is a couple accessory structures close by that could be used for, like, meeting rooms and such, so that's going to be part of it. There is a very strong trail system and network that'll use some existing cattle alleys, stone walls. The layout of this has really been done to preserve the existing stone walls to the extent possible. And when I say the extent possible, I think we have one area that we're crossing an existing stone wall. So those will be preserved in large form. That is definitely, you know, something that's really been a focus. And then if you're going along High Street, and you may recall from earlier presentations, there's been a strong priority on preserving the agricultural, you know, feel and the aesthetics from High Street. So when you take a look at, you know, Unit 1, which is the closest one to High Street, it's about 400 feet from High Street to the first unit. And that unit will be positioned up on a plateau. And so you, what you'll be looking at, you know, other than the road that will kind of traverse that area with the topography, you'll be looking at, you know, some preserved ag fields. We're really trying to preserve a lot of the mature trees in that location as well. There's, you know, some mature trees that are along some of the granite and stone wall features there. That'll be done. And then as you continue down High Street to the northwest, there's another agricultural field that will be, you know, maintained as part of this project. That'll be in the open space and really preserve that nice rural aesthetic. A lot of focus has gone into balancing, you know, the aesthetics and really creating a special and, you know, development here with this project. One of the barns will be preserved as a site amenity as well, and there's a proposal to try to market, you know, the equestrian side of, you know, utilizing some of those agricultural fields for an equestrian use. And, you know, there's been a market study that's been done that they, you know, we believe that people may move here, you know, and if 55 and older, and actually be able to bring their horse and have it boarded in that barn and utilize those agricultural fields accordingly.
So aesthetically, coming down High Street 27, most of these buildings will not be visible from the street, correct?
They would be, you know, partially visible, but they would be up on the plateau. So you'd probably see roof lines and stuff, but they're not going to be prominent, you know, and jump out along Route 27 for sure.
The barn you speak of, where is it in the relation to and that map?
Yep. So the barn is actually situated right here. So it's behind the Stewart.
So it's behind the Stewart house. Aren't you selling that property off? Is that not?
It is on a, but there's an easement, and the rights to that barn would be preserved by this development. That's a great question. Yeah. And it's, what happens is, because of the existing, you know, jurisdictional wetlands in this area, and because of the geometry of the lot, in order to meet the 1.5 acre of contiguous area, we, you know, we had to include that barn area into that. But in order to meet the goals and objectives of the development, we were able to accomplish that through an easement.
And if they wanted to maintain that house, they couldn't keep that in a 55-plus community because it's...
Doesn't meet any of the setbacks.
Any of the standards in terms of two stories and all that type of thing. It would be...
Correct.
So basically, if you wanted to include that in 55-plus, you'd pretty much have to flatten it.
It wouldn't meet the setback, buffer requirements to the perimeter and things like that. Yeah. And all of the other elements that we've met with the 55 and other development.
Or move it. Yeah.
The architectural style of the buildings will be fitting with, you know, Candia's traditional New England character and aesthetics. And we do have some examples of, you know, of building styles that our client would like to, you know, include as part of the project. So this is just one example of a building. This is two-story. To your point, Mr. Chairman, we did go before the zoning board, and interestingly enough, this board may recall, and there's some new faces, but a couple years ago, the planning board had the ability to waive those standards, and then the town made there was a vote that requires the zoning board approve relief under the elderly housing section. And so we have been before the zoning board. We did receive a number of variances for this project. One of them was the two-story component. The primary goal and the details related to that is that the main floor has to have the master bedroom and the bathroom, the main components that would be required. So the second floor would be a guest room or a hobby room, but would not be required for, you know, somebody to live in there if they had, you know, accessibility issues or, you know, whatnot.
Will those be on slabs or will they be full basement?
I believe full basements is what we're planning. In a couple areas, we do have an option for walkouts and things like that. And so you try to really build everything into the topography as much as possible. Certainly somebody could approach, Mr. Logan and say, we prefer to have a slab or a heated slab or something like that. And, he may entertain that, but they do have full basements currently proposed. Unit sizes will vary, but they'll all be larger than the minimum 800 square foot, requirement. And so we would, meet and exceed that criteria. And I'm happy to go through the conditional use permit standards and criteria as we go, Mr. Chairman. I'm touching on some of them just in the presentation, but...
Yeah, we'll dig in deeper later on.
The access roads, we're proposing a 22-foot wide access road with this project. We did submit a number of waivers.
To clarify up front, too, this is not going to be a town road, right? This is going to be maintained by the condominium association.
Absolutely. Yep. This will be a private road, 100%. Maintained by the association. For that matter, everything associated with the development will be maintained. So stormwater, utilities, this project will not have, or cause a burden as it relates to maintenance with, to the community. Just like the other two elderly housing projects that we've done in town, we're seeking similar relief for this project. We've just had to do it a little bit differently because of the regulation change. So we've obtained a variance for all the design standard relief that we're looking for, and we're also requesting a waiver from this board because the project requires approvals from both boards, and so there's a little bit of redundancy there. It seems a little incorrect, but at the same time, we're trying to dot our I's and cross our T's, as you stated. So I think we have everything covered, and I'm happy to go through all of those details as we get further into the dialogue. The layout of this project will contemplate two roads. We have names haven't been approved yet, so we're calling them Road A and Road B on the plans currently. But Road A will start down, just adjacent to the Stewart House, which is, it would be just east of that home, just about where the existing driveway is, actually, for that. Reason for that selection is that's the safest location along the frontage of the project. We have great site distance there in both the east and west directions. This will require a New Hampshire DOT access permit. We meet their standards, and certainly in this location. So that Road A will traverse into the project and kind of work southerly and then ultimately loop around. It terminates at the clubhouse. So that's it would come right around to that amenity. And then the existing driveway that accesses the clubhouse or the existing residence would be maintained for an emergency access and would be gated. The reason why it has to be gated is because there is not adequate site distance at the intersection of the driveway and Route 27. And so we have reviewed this with DOT, on a preliminary level. We haven't formally submitted an application. We wanted to at least have some discussion with the board before we did that. But in our discussions with DOT, that would have to be gated in order for them to permit that as an access.
And that lock gated would be available to police, fire, and rescue to get
absolutely
through,
right? We'd provide a Knox box or a crash gate or whatever the preference was. And I will say we have reviewed this project with the fire department, and they have told us they're happy with the project. There is some conflicting notes and information in the plans that we need to clean up. There's a reference to a monetary contribution. That is not the agreement that we have with the fire department. What we've agreed to do is to improve the fire pond up here in this north easterly corner and provide additional capacity in that pond, which would service the entire community, not just this development. And we're trying to get that formalized with the fire department currently, but we have had discussions with the chief, and he's happy with that as it relates to the project. So Road A would have a total length of about 1,250 feet, but none of the roads are dead end or trigger the dead end standards because we have a complete loop here. And then Road B, which would require the test for the dead end happens to be, you know, only about 900 feet long, so it doesn't exceed the requirements. So we do meet all the requirements for those standards. The site has been designed to have shared utilities, so we'll have, you know, underground electric, cable. We'll have, there'll be some shared septic systems. We've actually roughed those in on the plans. Basically, what we've done, depending on location and test pits, is we've tried to share a septic with two or three units when we can. There's a couple areas where the community system is slightly larger just because of some, you know, topography, you know, situations or setbacks to wetlands and such. All of those systems would require Department of Environmental Services approval through their subsurface division, and so we look forward to submitting those. We would hope the board would consider that as, you know, one of the many conditions of approval once we get to that point. There will also be a community water system for this project. That community water system and well is proposed in this location here, which is kind of in that northerly horizon, if you will. That well radius is entirely located on the property, meeting all the standards and such that, you know, we would anticipate. We do ultimately have to drill the well and make sure there's adequate capacity and do that design and get that permit, you know, through the state. And so just like the other projects, both elderly housing projects that we've done in town has had that community water system requirement as a condition of approval. So we, again, would hope the board would consider that once we get to that point. One of the things that we did talk about when we met with you conceptually, I believe, was site lighting. Interestingly enough, in the conditional use permit standards, it references other standards in the town, so subdivision and site plan standards, and there's a lighting standard that kind of gets encapsulated in that. With this project, our client has wanted to minimize the site lighting requirements and try to provide, you know, people with a nice, you know, night sky element. I mean, when you start having lighting requirements, it really does kind of cut off that, you know, that visibility to the stars and to that nightscape. So
if you come back here in our first meeting in January, you will be hearing us adding new language to it, having a public hearing about new language to encourage those exact same things you're talking about.
So. Perfect. That's good. So we were successful in getting a variance as it pertained to the lighting design here, and the only condition to that variance was that we have motion lighting at the clubhouse, which we thought was reasonable for access and someone getting to their car in kind of a public space. So that we were successful at the zoning board for that, and we've also requested a waiver relative to that design standard from this board. For the stormwater management for this project, pretty comprehensive design. Happy to get into the details of that, but basically, we have a number of stormwater management areas. Most of them are situated, you know, in the backyards of these units so that they don't become a prominent feature when you're traversing through the site. We don't want it to be something that impacts the aesthetics, but we still have to meet, you know, those design standards. And realistically, it's not the town standards that are so much of an issue. It's the, although they primarily mimic the alteration of terrain standards now. But we do have that alteration of terrain permit that we will have to secure through the Department of Environmental Services. So once again,
I noticed what there's three or four.
Yeah, there's quite a few actually. Yeah. There's
three or four ponds and settlement areas.
Yeah, I think it's four, maybe even five. Yeah. But yeah, we've tried to scatter them and locate them in areas that are just situated behind the units and meeting all those, you know, mitigation requirements.
You've also got a dual slope, right? You've got slope in the front going toward the road and then slope in the back going away from the road, right?
Correct. So we essentially have designed the road, very good point, to be a closed drainage system. So you have a nice clean curb. So the front yards of the homes would drain to the road. The backyards would ultimately drain away from the road. No driveway culverts, so it would be a very nice, kind of clean, be able to be, you know, appropriately landscaped and manicured along that front side. When you get into these elderly developments, you try to put the homes reasonably close together. This layout is actually very unique in that you know, Mr. Logan has spent a lot of time working on orientation of homes to try to capture viewscapes, but also have appropriate buffering to neighboring properties. And so there's been a lot of thought in each individual home placement. So the separation between homes is quite a lot, you know, quite a bit larger than in other communities.
And one thing that just dawned on me, I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure each one of these buildings is a single resident building, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, so we have that closed drainage system that helps us capture the improvements, and then we convey that to the stormwater management areas. We have some open drainage areas behind units to help capture and convey to meet all of those, you know, qualitative and quantitative stormwater mitigation components, which we, you know, do believe that we've addressed with this project at this point. So, you know, in summary, we certainly believe that this development will provide for much needed housing, offer additional housing diversity in town, and, you know, meet the master plan and all the regulations. I will say there was, I think in the current review letter, there was some, you know, certainly many questions posed to the board. We're hoping that we can work our way through those at some point. There was one related to, you know, the percentage of elderly housing units in town. I believe the only two that exist are the two that we've worked on. And so this would be the third one in town. So currently there's 71 units in town that would be elderly once Mr. Komisarek's property is built out, which it's under construction now. And then with the 48 that we're proposing, that would put us at about 119 units in town. And the latest census report says the town has about a 4,200 person population. So that would put us around 3% total. So
I think
certainly
the number of housing units. Housing units is what, 1,400, I think.
Yeah, it should be in there.
It's roughly 1,400 or 1,500.
1,400 or 1,500.
Oh, okay, housing. Yep,
yeah,
my bad.
It's housing units.
So we would still fall under the 10%.
Correct.
Yeah, getting correct. Closer though, especially if that's
mm-hmm. not much more room left. Yeah.
And then, you know, certainly there's the, you know, conditional use criteria and design standards. I'm happy to, you know, to get into all those details. I just don't want to get too far ahead. We did get our initial review from Keach Nordstrom Associates, very thorough. We felt it would be appropriate to work through that before coming to the board with our first mm-hmm. presentation. I think you'll find that their second review letter, you know, has been significantly reduced, and I'm certainly happy to go through, you know, all of those comments and suggestions if you, you know, would like as well, Mr. Chairman. I just don't want
to... Not now. Okay. We'll get to that. Okay. This, yeah. One sec. So, if you're done, like, presenting with the thing.
Yeah, that's the, you know, kind of the high-level presentation. I'm certainly
sure.
happy to
yeah.
touch well, on.
We're
going to
dig in. Trust me. I'm gonna roll my sleeves up now. So, just so everybody knows, the procedure by state regulation is that they give their presentation. The board then asks questions. We consult with our town engineer, and we go through everything. And we figure out if the application is complete, all right? If the application is complete, we will then open a public hearing for public comment. But we can't open the hearing for public comment until after the application is complete. We might get there tonight, we don't know, but we'll try, okay? But just so you know. So what I will do at this time, if anybody has a question about the procedures, you can't ask questions about the development. We can't ask questions to the developer, but does everybody understand that, or is there a question? Okay. Great. So I've been asking a lot of questions because I spent the afternoon going through this. Anybody else on the board got questions or anything you want to state before we start diving in?
Have you checked with the National Heritage Bureau for endangered species on the land?
We have. And the Natural Heritage Bureau data check did come back with potentials for endangered species in the area. Mm-hmm. And so we're actively consulting with Fish and Game because that's required as part of the alteration of terrain mm-hmm. process. But that would be a state permit level. Yep.
Thank you.
Good.
And the backland, that's going to be remain undeveloped from that point on, except for the ones that you subdivide out, right?
Yes, and I appreciate you asking that question because I failed to touch on that.
That's quite a bit of acreage.
Yeah, so the requirement for this project is 40% of land preservation, and we're at about 89% with this project. So when you think about land preservation and such, we are more than doubling the requirement currently with this proposal. And what that consists of is about 144 acres of land would be protected as part of this project.
But that back piece that's completely undeveloped is what, like 60, 70 acres, if I saw somewhere correctly?
Yeah, so what we're calling out is this area here, which is like the area into the back that doesn't consist of anything with, the development, is about, it's like 66 acres. I do believe that's defined up here. But the reality is all these agricultural field areas will be preserved too, and that's on the front side, and it still counts as open space preservation.
And what I'm saying is that, and basically that's now undevelopable land from back, that 66 acres is now
correct.
Undevelopable.
And that's all really mature. It's beautiful woods back there, nice trail network. It's quite a phenomenal property. And to be honest, we started with Mr. Logan, it feels like years ago, I think it was, and we were looking at concepts that had, units back here just because the views are phenomenal. This is one of the higher plateaus in town. But as the project development started to go on and he started to look at the mature trees and just how nice that area is, and I'll touch, I can touch on some of the project goals and objectives, but this was an area that he ultimately thought would be best preserved and then have that be an amenity for people to hike and to see those views and such, from a different way instead of from a home. And, kind of create, the development isn't centrally located, but it's located in the area that best balances the, preservation of the land. This is almost the area that's currently been impacted by the existing homesteads and such. And so they haven't, gotten into those mature trees there's been a ton of thought put into that. And so I just want to state that for the board's benefit that this will be preserved. And so I do appreciate that question.
On the map, I did see proposed hiking trails, proposed walking trails. So you're gonna have some proposed walking trails. Are those just for residents, or will they have access from a road, or just a question?
Yeah, I mean, currently, I think they're primarily for residents.
Yeah.
And many of them exist. We show them on the plans as, proposed, because we're going to formally, offer them as trails for the, residents. But there's an existing fire road that actually starts at this northeastern corner here and runs all the way up through to Baker Road. And so that Woods Road will be, basically converted into a trail. There's existing crossings to the wetlands for that. And then there's, currently, very nice trails that kind of meander in that westerly direction as well. The cattle alleys that we touched on, one of them is located here. And so this will be preserved, for a trail and tie into that road. There's also one that's going to be preserved between the clubhouse and what's shown as units 46 and 48 through here. So that'll be a corridor that, provides pedestrian connectivity between all the site amenities, but also, preserves those historic elements on site, which is nice.
Can I ask a question? Do we have to mention anything about ADUs eventually?
No.
So this would
be
ineligible.
He already asked
ineligible.
That.
Ineligible, okay.
Condominiums.
Good question.
Now, I'm curious about the process, the subdivision on a Class 6 road.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
That is something that I don't know the answer to, whether that is allowable or not at this point.
Yeah, so I think currently, there are some state laws that have been changed to try to promote development on Class 6 roads. This lot would require selectman approval and currently a variance. We were hoping that the board would consider those as a condition, just because we'd be happy to go forward with that. We just wanted to make sure there was nothing else that we needed relief for with this application before we go back to the zoning board. The worst case scenario is this unit could be absorbed back into the development if we were unsuccessful in securing the variance, and this would just become a 55 and older unit. All we would need at that point is selectman's approval to utilize Baker Road as an access. We wouldn't need the frontage requirement.
Yeah, I know the selectman needed to be involved, but I didn't know the details of it.
So I would also bring up that I don't know that this is a Class 6 road, putting it, having over 55. You know, our requirement is that it has to be on a main road and such. And
that'd be a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah, there's a lot of kettle of fishes to.
Lots of kettles of fishes.
But there is no access.
We'd be looking at just one unit, though. I think the goal of the 55 and older regulation is that for the traffic, for the whole development, you'd be putting that onto a state-approved highway, whereas, and this isn't our intention. Like, we hope this could be approved as a market rate. The other option was, if that was really an issue, I mean, we have plenty of land here to add another unit if we had to, but we are kind of, we really like this, the layout, and so we'd prefer to leave this one over here if we could. Okay. I think that I think it's a reasonable ask, but certainly everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Well, yeah, it would have to go to the Board of Selectmen anyway.
Correct. Yeah, the whole thing. So, I guess if nobody else has anything right now, Steve, I don't know if you want to say anything, or
I can review my report with you.
Sure, perfect. I'd rather you read it than me. I talk too much as it is.
I guess it's a good thing. When Chad started his presentation, I went out and got my glasses.
Oh, yeah.
I looked at Nate and I said, oh, man.
Yeah.
So, the first submittal of this, the initial submittal, formal submittal, came to me end of October. And I reviewed it, and I issued a letter to Megan on the 17th of November. And it was correctly characterized. I mean, it's a big set of plans. Had several pages of remarks. And Chad's people promptly responded with a submission that my office received, and your office as well, on December 5th. And 5 days later, I issued the report that I think you have in front of you now. The Fieldstone did a very good job responding to the technical comments. So a lot of what is left now, a bigger ticker, I think. So we'll go over that. I think that was referred to earlier. Before I get into my letter, we just talked about the Baker Road issue. There was a statutory change in this past legislative session that modifies RSA 674-41 Roman 1C as it pertains to the issuance of building permits on classic roads. As Mark correctly indicated, today's version of the statute, which remains current through July 1st, does require dispensation from the Board of the Selectmen to direct or authorize the building inspector to issue a permit for the construction of a building on that's accessed by a Class 6 road. That goes away July 1st of 2026. After that point, a building permit can be issued as with any permit, provided the waiver, which is required under the current statute, of municipal liability is executed, recorded at the Registry of Deeds. And I don't know what legislature was thinking when they enacted this additional requirement that somebody seeking a building permit after July 1st will have to demonstrate to a building inspector that the future construction is insurable. What does that mean? We debated that last night in Sandow. Well, I was with the planning board because I just updated their zoning ordinance. And, the Senate bill. So their state senator, Senator Gannon, former member of the planning board, so one of the members was going to query said Senator Gannon. And so I'll have an answer for you the next time I see you, but I don't have it tonight. You know, we had it, differences of opinion of whether it meant just an insurance. You know, you can get it, insure the property for homeowner's insurance. I suspect that that's what it means. We had a member of the board last night that construed it to mean title insurance. You know? We're probably both wrong. But, you know, it didn't come with instructions, and of course the statute is not current yet. So I just wanted, because I didn't want to jump into your discussion when you were having it, but that's something that will play itself out. All right, so my letter, I think you should have a copy of. I'm just going to go through it very briefly and stop anytime you want to.
Dated November 17th?
December 10th.
December 10th. As I said, the November 17th letter is
okay.
Whittled down significantly. General comments, and I have two. Both, one of which, the first one, Chad addressed in his presentation. There are a variety of state permits that are going to be necessary for that. And those are listed there. I don't think there was any debate that those were the correct permits, Chad, right?
That's correct.
The second remark, and this is for later down the road, is I'm recommending that pursuant to provisions of Section 503 of the Major Site Plan Regulations, that as a condition of any approval we may ultimately grant, have a condition of approval requiring posting of a performance guarantee, the service surety for site restoration in the event of abandonment, proper installation and maintenance of erosion and sedimentation controls throughout the duration of construction.
Yep.
If there were public improvements were going to be contemplated, that would be listed as well, but there are not, right?
Yep. That's SOP for us anyway.
Yep. Yeah, I thought so. Zoning matters. First comment. There's a bunch of bullets there that I'll begin with Article 5, Section whatever. That is the series of variances that Chad referred to that were granted by the Zoning Board of Adjustment on April 22nd of the present year.
Mm-hmm.
And I conclude that remark by saying the site plan is submitted to the board for consideration and relies on those variances, and it has. Second zoning matters comment. Again, this is a conditional use. Senior housing, elderly housing, is allowed in the rural district by conditional use permit. The way your zoning ordinance is constructed, the consideration of the CUP runs concurrent with your site plan review function. So, Chad mentioned in his presentation, or made reference to, conditional use permit criteria. And that's exactly what they are, but some of them set up as performance standards, and many have been incorporated into the design of the plans that are before you right now. The ones that I believe will require action or consideration on the part of your board as this advances is those that are predominantly involve subjectivity. And that includes the architecture, the landscape standards, and so forth. Interestingly, this has been a project. It's a zero lot line layout. It will be advanced, or is being advanced, under a condominium, in anticipation of being a condominium. As far as the maintenance, ownership, infrastructure, common land, that creates a wonderful vehicle to incorporate per requirements of the zoning ordinance relative to preservation, management of open space in perpetuity, management of infrastructure, maintenance of infrastructure, so forth, it can be incorporated into the documents. Obviously, I suspect it is your practice that projects that involve condominium or HOA documents, at some point you collect a draft and have council review it for you for compliance. Mm-hmm. And yep. That is my recommendation. There. I don't believe a draft has been submitted yet, Jim. Has it? No.
No. And if it's not submitted beforehand, it'll be
so
conditional.
And again, Chad mentioned, used the word, and I think maybe I'm paraphrasing his remarks about a couple of things, premature, like submitted to the state permits. You needed to come here first.
Correct.
And I don't think you're going to invest the time and energy in developing a set of condominium documents until you know that, you know, what you've hatched is going to be a chicken, right?
Yeah, we say in the thing that it has to be part of the application, but we basically say you can't apply for it until you get our approval, so
right.
It ends up being a condition of the approval.
You know, but as with anything, you know...
Chicken and egg.
There you go. In this particular case here, because of the CUP language, you know, because of open space, because of common infrastructure, you know, it's just a wonderful vehicle by which to incorporate that into the end of it all. So I made that remark. Chad also mentioned, you know, the 10% cap on the number of dwelling units. I had no idea, and I'm glad you brought that up, but I just think at some point, because it is a zoning requirement, that ought to be documented for the record in the minutes of your proceedings with a more than, you know, a precise number or some reasonably accurate number, that it's less than 10%. We talked about architecture, elderly, and that architectural design, that was the variance that was obtained. You know, the way that the ordinance is constructed, that CUP criterion, gives you some subjective ability as a planning board to look at the architecture and feel if it's appropriate for the location. And I suspect you will do that in due time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The fire protection piece, section 5.06.24 of the CUP criteria, contemplates all units be sprinkled, and I understand because of some notes on the plan that there's some alternative arrangements that either have or are being negotiated with the fire department. Well, once those reach a final form that's comfortable with Mr. Rogan and fire, I think that needs to come back to your board so that you can say, yeah, that makes sense, right? Because the CUP criteria is your criteria, right? And I think whatever the outcome of that has to be ratified by your board at the appropriate time. And that was that comment and remark. And I guess F was back where I started, and that is the documents. Zoning matters 3, bottom of page 3, was pointed out, it's in this vicinity here, there is a single wetland impact on here. It's like 2,750 square feet, and that's permitted under your zoning ordinance with a special permit. That land is, yeah, it's 2,570. I was a little dyslexic there. That wetland, that narrow band, bifurcates the property diagonally. And one of the principal performance criteria that are is written into your zoning ordinance is that the proposed construction is essential to the productive use of land not within the Wetlands Conservation District. Whereas that wetland bifurcates this property in this direction, this portion is completely inaccessible without that. So I think that one is one of those ones that I think is pretty clear.
Yeah.
But you'll take that up in due time, I'm sure. You enjoy the ability to make a determination on that by special use permit. Planning design matters. If you go back to my letter of the November 17th, I wrote you a book. Chad and his engineer, Nathan Chamberlain, got out the eraser and they took a pen and they took care of about 90% of that. So the first couple of items are perfunctory. Setting bounds, Scrivener's error on the plan, that type of thing. I won't bother you with that. The third item is that there's sheet CD1 through CD3. of the condominium site plan, and they graphically depict today limited common areas around each of the units where those familiar with this type of condominium would understand that the owner of the unit would have exclusive use of that, but you know they don't have hold it title to that piece. It's not a fee simple lot. And just at some point when this thing matures, I'd like to have those defined by meets and bounds so they're identifiable on the ground if they ever needed to be. And the cover letter that I received in response to my remarks, or actually you received in response to my remarks, indicates that that is something that they will do when they know those lines aren't going to move. There's a lot of work necessary to compute those by meets and bounds, so I can understand that. Remark number four is lengthy, and so I'm not going to bore you with it, but this all deals with a series of waivers that were requested for road standards, right? I wanted to give you some analysis on that. Our town road standards for public streets are completely appropriate for what they were devised for, and that is rural roads and the rural community. Contemplates graded gravel shoulders, ditch lines for drainage, open drainage, and so forth. Very appropriate. Very inappropriate for a compact neighborhood that's a condominium, right? You know, where you want to have a less utilitarianism, curb, closed drainage, at level of construction that you wouldn't want to go through the expense and maintenance to do in a rural area. Obviously, the cost per linear foot of what Mr. Logan is proposing here far exceeds what it would cost to build an equal length of road under the current standards. It's a higher degree of finish. It's not builder grade, it's custom. You know what I mean? And the written waiver request that Fieldstone submitted captures all of that. And before you take action on it, I recommend that you read what he's written. I've only paraphrased it here. But, you know, it's basically substitution of the 4-foot graded gravel shoulders with curb, relaxation of some of the interior design, horizontal, vertical alignment considerations that really allow for that curvilinear nature. You know, one of the things I see in projects like this, and whether I review them or they've been designed by people in my office, it's always my pet peeve, is you enter it and you see a line of houses going down the road. It looks like a track subdivision, right? That isn't going to look like that. Right? But some of those curves in there have a shorter radius than you would have if that was being built as a road in a subdivision out in a 3-acre lot someplace, right? Hence the waiver request to relax the minimum curve radius from 300 down to as little as 100 in certain places in there. And the same with the vertical alignment, right? This has been designed consistently, combination horizontal and vertical for 25 mile an hour design speed. And to that end, in response to a request that I made on November 17th, they're actually going to do an internal posting to that to advise motorists of that particular accommodation. Typical cross-section of the proposed road construction with the modifications contemplated by Mr. Logan and Chad is shown on sheet DT1 of the full set of project plans. It's appropriate for this locale, in my opinion. And then one of the other waiver requests is to modify the geometry of the turnaround and the cul-de-sac at the end of road B. I'm good with that if your fire chief is good with that, because he's the one who's got the biggest truck, right? Mm-hmm. And so,
that's what he tells us.
Well, I don't know.
is turning red.
I know a guy over near. I know a guy over near the Raymond line. It's in some pretty big stuff too. So anyways, my editorial remark on all this is offered at the bottom of page 4 and on to page 5. At the end of the day, guys, I think this is the design standards that they have come up with and have advanced for this are as appropriate for this development as your current road standards would be for an ordinary subdivision of fee simple lots elsewhere in town. Right? You know, part of the curb piece is, if you look at the plans carefully along that interior loop, there's sidewalk on much of it that leads you to the community building, where the repurposed home. Right? Obviously, if there's a ditch line and graded gravel shoulders in there, that's kind of mutually exclusive to that amenity. Mm-hmm. Right? So, it's just a very well thought out design, in my opinion. Other than that, put the street names on the plans when they are available. Get some input on from your fire department recommendation.
I was going there in a minute.
All right, perfect. And then on the utility piece, final plans, you know, Chad used the, right, you know, conditions of approval, and that would be fine. You know, detailed designs of the septic designs, and more importantly, the water system. You know, the permitting of that system through the state is a stepwise critical path process. The first step would be to get well siting approval, right? Second step is they install the well and do 72-hour pump test, quantity, quality, and so forth. And if you pass go at each of those tests, you get to write out a big check for somebody to design your water system and do detailed plans for construction. And, you know, again, it takes a few minutes. So I can see why they wouldn't have jumped out and do that. And I'm going to close with one remark, and that was following up on the chairman's recitation of procedures. I don't vote, but if you do, and you do, I think you have a complete application that you can accept under 676-4 to begin the public hearing process. Is there any questions?
Just one. So in terms of your thought, your belief on the road for fire equipment and the like, the only part that you saw an issue with is the cul-de-sac.
No, I don't really see that. I just want your chief to tell you he's good with it.
Okay, and the other thing is all the drainage and stuff was all good, too.
The drainage is good. You know, part of the conversation, somebody pointed out, one of the members of the board pointed out, and Chad engaged in conversation about having a larger number of smaller stormwater management areas. We look at set of plans. You open it up, and there's sheet 2, you see the existing conditions plan. You open up sheet 3, and you get the overview of what it looks like when it's done. What you often forget when you're going from sheet 2 to sheet 3 is it can take years to get there. So having a stormwater design that's logical, it can be implemented as the construction proceeds and not force somebody to do something prematurely, ends up, I think, with a better outcome. It's not always possible. You know, water does run downhill for the most part, right? And, you know, depending upon the piece of land that you're given to develop or to attempt to do a design, it isn't always possible. In this particular case, again, because of that bifurcating wetland where a lot of the water ends up at the end of the day, it was possible, and the design engineer seized upon that possibility and incorporated that into the design. I would go as far to say that this is as close to a low-impact design stormwater-wise that I've seen at this scale in quite some time. And I guess you got some elbow room when you have a piece of land this large, don't you?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I probably would have had a completely different conversation if we were having this meeting with you a month ago after I wrote my original letter, but because it's other people's work, I don't have to have that conversation. So I'll shut up and let you listen to other people.
Okay. So, Dean, I get we'll take your input. You're still the chief, right? On where you're at with the fire negotiations with these guys and.
What was the question?
So there was discussion about, you know, the water pond being rehabbed and the cul-de-sac at the end of Road B, whether that was whether that road adequate. Design was adequate for getting your trucks in and out and turning around.
They should be.
Okay. And
when I'm gone, who knows? Could be a huge ladder truck coming. I don't know.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah. No. And the same thing with that exit road, because when I first looked at the road design for Road A and I saw that it kind of just dead ended, I went, ooh, we're not going to get a fire truck out of there. And then I remembered that emergency access road. Right. And you're good with that too.
Yeah. And I talked to Jim the other day about the pond. Now, funny thing is, as dry as it was this fall, now all the ponds around were dried up except for the major ones like Mill Pond, this one here. But it was low, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I stopped up there and there was water in that pond. I couldn't believe it. And it's really deep, that pond, and Jim's agreed to dredge it out and make it. That's a nice, nice water source. And we're gonna swing the hydrant around to have access on a little spur road there, get our trucks off High Street if we need the draft, and... The good thing about it is that would be good for the whole area. You know?
And that's on your land as well, right? That spur that he wants to put in?
That's correct. That is on Mr. Logan's land. And I would just say we've agreed to reworking the hydrant and improving the pull-off a little bit, which is really the old fire road in irony. That's the road that we talked about here that is the Woods Road currently, but it would need a little bit of improvement for, you know, getting the truck in there. And I would just say, for everybody's benefit, we did submit a turning exhibit plan. It's one of the exhibits in the plan set that shows that a fire truck can make it through all the roads around the cul-de-sac and down through the emergency access way. And we did that in large part so that everybody could see that evaluation's been done and we're certifying that, you know, it's designed appropriately. And I will say that the cul-de-sac that we're proposing is the same size cul-de-sac that we secured a waiver on for the existing elderly housing project that's completely built out. And so I think, you know, that we're not reducing the standards to any lower than dimensional standards that this board has approved in the past. But again, we have submitted the supporting information that shows that it would meet the requirements.
Okay. So based on Steve's recommendation, which I think I agree with, that we should look at going for a vote on is it complete, and then open the public comment, and then we got a lot of stuff to get into after that, right? So we got the plans, we've got the application, we've got two waivers, correct?
Three.
Three? Am I missing one on my time?
I have that waiver here. It's
Article 1, these are...
Oh, those are variances.
Oh, I got two copies of this.
There's six waivers.
Six waivers, but I thought it was each individual. I got two copies of the same document, so I thought it was two waivers, right? So we have seven waivers.
Yes.
I think it's six.
You get seven things here.
Six, there's seven.
Okay.
The first three are redundant to the variances received.
There's seven. Gotcha. Okay. All right. And that's all the waivers.
Would it be in writing about the spur road and the hydrant turning?
It would be in writing. We plan on formalizing that with the design. Okay. You know, so after tonight's hearing, I mean, if you want to vote on it this evening, then it would have to be a condition, but I don't suspect we're getting there.
We're not getting there.
And so no, we plan on submitting an exhibit plan that formalizes.
Not a waiver request, Ellie.
No, not talking waiver, but I was just...
This is not what we're not close to voting whether to approve or reject this yet. Yeah. We got a lot of digging to do,
yeah.
Right? All we're looking to do now is it a complete application?
and then we can open the hearing up to the public, and then we'll close the hearing because we are now at 1 hour and 10 minutes. and then we'll uh-huh. continue this, and then we'll dig in deeper next time. Sound like a plan?
Yeah.
All right. Motion.
I'll make a motion accept that we accept the application as complete.
I'll second.
Okay. Judy, second. All right, Judy.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Tim. Yes. Brian.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
Kevin.
Yes.
Bingo. It is now complete. So at 7:41, we are going to open the public hearing for public comment on the Farms of Candia major site plan. Public comment, anybody? Questions?
Any chance you could turn that easel so we can see it?
Sure, you can do that, Chad.
I can be happy to do that.
Ben, actually, Chad, maybe for right now, why don't you put it over here so that they can like walk up and take a look if they want without bothering anybody? How's that? Oops, don't bean yourself.
Yeah, we'll let the owl. The owl.
Yeah.
I don't want to block
the owl. You can block it as far as coming.
Okay.
Yeah, because we got it in front of the table.
Judy, be careful. Detailed drawing. That's why he didn't come an inch.
If you want to come up,
yeah, really, take a look if you want to. Yeah.
Unless you got great eyesight back there.
That's the elderly guy.
The top is high, Route 27?
Correct.
That's correct.
Anybody else got anything?
This is the farmhouse.
Oh, wait, John, you got it. Oh. Say your name.
Sorry,
and
my name's
what,
John Adams, 946 High Street.
There we go.
Longtime resident. This is the old farmhouse, basically, with the clear cut up the hill.
Yeah, okay. Which used to be the goat farm.
Yep.
Okay.
My only concern is just visual driving by that all the time. We have a lot of 55 and older communities. There's just a new one right down the road. There's one right over here. Candy is not cluster development, or it wasn't. Now it is. My thing is, again, these are going to be on top of each other. Any sort of screening of the house? What's the thought there?
So as, I don't want to stand in front of the owl, but as we stated before, it's a great question. This unit one is about 400 feet from the road.
I understand. I totally get it. Yeah, 400 feet is not a lot of...
It's actually quite a lot. But
if it's
if you're familiar with the site, which it sounds like you are, there's an existing stone wall that traverses from kind of northeast to south, northwest to southeast, and there's kind of a pine tree row that exists along that. We plan on maintaining that vegetation, so the units will really be a backdrop. You know, with the exception of the road here, you're going to have the preservation of that field out in front. You'll also have that preservation over here. And if you're familiar with the site, it actually goes up and kind of plateaus right around that 400, maybe a little past that, about that 400-foot mark. All the units are situated up on that plateau, and that is to preserve that rural character and really that condition along there. Certainly these units could have been, much closer. The regulations only require that it's 50 feet from... the highway, but Mr. Logan, and trying to balance everything, he really took a look at this, from a standpoint of, what kind of market he wants to attract, the quality of, life for people inside the development, and also being sensitive to the neighbors. I mean, he definitely has a strong sense of that. This is where the site distance is the best along High Street, so that's the reason why the access is there. But there has been a lot of thought put into that. We've been before, this board and the zoning board kind of reviewing that, and ultimately this layout, was picked because of all of those.
Is there any sort of screening at all, any sort of trees? Because what was on the property is nothing now.
And so my client hasn't, really cut anything on the property. But
no, but the previous owner did.
Yeah. And so there, as
this
I stated before.
It's all above
before,
that. This it's all above and beyond that.
From High Street. It's all open.
Right, but yeah. He's talking about it's past that.
Yeah, it's past the field area.
There's nothing being put in that open space now.
This is
that far up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an open field area now. None of those units will be located in the
field.
Like
you said earlier, you're going to be lucky to see rooftops.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And then what size are the lots? They're basically what, cluster development? Or?
Yeah, so the size, I mean, the size between the homes are, you know, I don't have exact numbers. They're probably going to be, you know, 14 to 20,000 square feet. That's the limited common areas.
Very similar to the one up over here.
Technically going to be one lot. These will be bigger than the other one. Because of just the layout of the units.
It's all one lot.
It's all one lot, yeah.
Again, site design, all that stuff sounds great. It's just more appearance. But if it is as far as you guys are describing, then it sounds good.
So the first house is 125 yards up the hill.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Or more.
Well, I got a 400-foot driveway. You can see my house from the road.
Yeah.
But 400 feet's not long.
Don't put in a straight driveway.
But if it's the first house you see,
there's a lot
behind.
Yeah, there's a lot behind. Kathleen, go ahead.
Oh, Kathleen Tierney. Hi, Jim. 178 New Boston Road. I just want to ask, you're going to try to use two existing buildings, right? What guarantees do we have that those buildings actually can be used? Because I understand that another development that wanted to use an existing building wasn't able to.
So, you know, certainly the clubhouse that's being used is more modern, you know, construction. And so, you know, I personally have been in that space, and it's a very, you know, well-built home. I think the original owner was a local carpenter. So,
well, that hasn't been sitting vacant more than a few months.
Correct. It really hasn't been vacant. You know, it looks like someone could move in today. You know, we have project meetings there. It's a very nice home, modern home. So to that extent, it's not anywhere near the condition that, you know, that you're referring to. The old farmhouse up in the front, that's an old home. That's going to need considerable, you know, work. But the goal here is to preserve that, you know, that rural, you know, historic character. And so that's on a separate lot. It's not going to be converted into a public space like that other building that you're referring to was going to have to contemplate. So it doesn't have to meet the same standards either. And so that's the goal, you know, with this.
Have you gotten any feedback on how if you can actually preserve that?
That's really not
right. Yeah, I mean, that's really a building permit item, but it, I mean, it's really a function.
That's
a
good question still.
No, it's not.
It is.
Not for this.
Maybe not for this, but
no.
Asking about the barn on the property, would you like me to address that, Mr. Chairman?
If you want to, you don't have to, obviously, right?
Yeah, the barn is pretty modern as well, and it's, you know, it'd be an equestrian barn, so it likely will have some work done to it, but it's in nice shape.
I just was asking.
Oh, it's great.
That's the barn on the adjacent property that's going to have a right of way to or an easement to?
Yeah. Correct.
So that house is going to be sold on as a separate entity.
Correct.
But the barn's going to be held back with an easement. So you'll retain ownership of the barn?
That's correct.
Okay.
I mean, you'll retain rights to the barn. And, you know, so they'd be responsible for upkeep and maintenance and all of that. If you look at the geometry, the barn is actually situated in the far corner of that lot and is quite disconnected from the house that's along the road. And so it makes sense, you know, that it really doesn't feel like it belongs to the home.
Okay.
And it's relatively close to, you know, the units of the development. And so it just provides more, you know, connectivity there. So that was a way to accomplish the goals.
Yeah, the good barn's fairly distant from the house. The crappy, ready to fall down barn is close.
Correct.
Will the road go to the? Will there be access to the barn?
Yeah.
Fire department.
Yes.
Whatever.
There is a gravel access that'll go to the barn, kind of like a driveway that'll provide. You know, they have to bring hay there and, you know, maintenance and certainly fire protection. We'll use that away.
Takeaway.
Every square footage of the house is ballpark.
That's true.
I think we've looked at a number of footprints. I think you're probably looking at it's the majority single floor living, right? So you have the master bedroom, everything. They're between like 1,500 and 1,800 square feet main floor.
There was a hand back there or no?
Yeah, he had.
Took a while, but we finally got to you.
You've been ignoring me all night. Successful. My name is Peter O'Neill. I live at 320 Baker Road. I've been there almost 40 years, and I have maintained Baker Road for the last 35 years because the town wouldn't even put a bucket of sand on it. And what are you going to do about that? You're going to maintain, you're going to pay Baker Road? What are you going to do with 100 cars at 7 o'clock in the morning and they'll leave your complex?
This isn't going through Baker Road.
It's not going to Baker
Road. There's
only
one house that's going to be on Baker Road.
This is going right out on 27, right on the High Street.
When you're playing, you've got an access road coming out of the middle of that complex.
No.
Because if you look at the map, there's one proposed...
Proposed, that we're not sure how that's going to work out, but there's one proposed building lot.
Okay, let me rephrase that. Where are the 100 cars going to exit?
High Street.
Yeah, the main exit is on, or the entrance and exit is on High Street right there.
And that's the only exit except for the emergency exit for the
fire
correct. Police.
That's all the traffic would go through that intersection. And that's
so it's 7 o'clock in the morning, you're going to have 100 cars trying to get out of that road.
Well, remember, these are senior citizens. Most of them probably aren't working.
55.
I'm a senior citizen, sir. I'm 82 years old.
Well, I'm 67. I don't go up my driveway at 7 o'clock in the morning.
These are 55 plus, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Not elderly. Elderly is 67.
Yeah, 55 plus.
Are you going to stipulate that they can only have one person in one car?
Definitely.
No.
Can't stipulate that.
It's state access. We don't have any authority.
Yeah, we have no jurisdiction on the traffic. This board can't talk about traffic or road access because that's state jurisdiction.
Yeah, but you people are trying to sell this program, this project.
We're not selling. We're reviewing it.
Yeah.
You're reviewing it.
Right.
Well, that ought to be a subject for review.
It's a state road.
It is subject to review in Concord. It's subject to review in the state. If it was a town road, we'd be talking about traffic. But it's a state road. We can't talk about traffic.
They get a DOT permit for the amount of traffic and site distance.
Town road. But then it made me maintain it for the last 35 years.
That's a class 6 road.
Yeah, it's a class 6 road.
I put in the culverts.
Yeah.
And I fill in the potholes every year. And this young fella here helps me.
Yeah. That's the stipulation. That's the stipulation for you living on a Class 6 road. You agreed to that back when you built on it.
No, I didn't agree.
Yeah, you did. You had to get permission from the Board of Selectmen at the time.
It wasn't exactly like that.
Well, I beg to differ, but
were you on the board at the time?
Not 40 years ago. 30 years ago, I was.
Do you remember Fred Kelly?
Yes.
Fred Kelly told me, he says, you don't want to buy that house, Peter. He says, because you'll need a helicopter to get in there in the wintertime. And you'll need a boat to get in there in the springtime.
No.
Because it floods. And it did at that time.
But you still built. Right?
I bought the house. It was built. It was 10 years old.
Right.
But I have had to maintain that road ever since. And... What is this corporation going to do? Are they going to maintain that road?
No,
because they're not
it's
touching it.
It's got nothing to do with your road. Absolutely nothing to do with your road.
It abuts Baker Road, but it doesn't, other than the one proposed home, which may or may not fly, they have no access onto Baker Road.
None of those cars.
Yeah.
But you're making no considerations for the increase in traffic?
On High Street?
Yeah, again, we can't. That is not under our jurisdiction because it's a state road.
The state permits that.
The state permits that, not us. So all we can do is review the project from the road in. We can't consider traffic. We can't even consider turning radiuses coming in or going out. That's all the state's purview out of our hands.
I think they should have at least two more access roads in and out of there.
Well, site distance from the state said no. They like the one they got.
Not mandated, so it's not mandated.
Okay.
Whether you think it should be or not, it's not mandated.
Well, there's no arguing with the law.
Well, you can argue, but you won't get far.
been down that road before.
Yep.
I'm going to tell you, DOT standards are far higher than these guys. So if they say it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah. All right. So at 6:56, we're going to close the public comment period.
7:56?
7:56, I'm sorry.
You made it. You made it.
Wow. I made it. Look at that.
I made it.
We still have to continue this. Do you want to continue it to the first meeting in January? Can we do that? Yes, we have.
I'm thinking. We have a subdivision and the zoning ordinance. That
Yes,
that work for you?
To request the continuance to your January meeting, Mr. Chairman.
I'll put it to the board. All those in favor of continuing to the January meeting? Aye.
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 Opposed?
That would be the 7th, correct?
Correct. All right.
Oh, great.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank
you. And then the fun will begin.
That was fun tonight.
I'm having a good time.
Well, it was a good presentation.
I want you to stay for this next one, Steve, real quick, right?
Yeah, I thought you might. I read your agenda.
Well, it's better than I did.
Jim, I like your point.
You see a lot.
Yeah. I like the way you laid it out.
Yeah, I do too. Appreciate it.
Very considerate on all the issues. Is that so my son can hunt up back there?
Only if he produces it.
Chad, did you make it all the way through your water, or are you okay still?
I made it all the way through.
You're probably ready for beer now.
That's something we should look at putting in the, I guess I can say this on public record, that's something we should look at putting in our board bylaws, limiting... Trying to limit meetings to an hour and a half, hearings to an hour and a half. Right, we can extend it if we want to, but then that way there we don't get these.
Right, you get moving and focused and yes.
I like the way you
do it. I like it.
Yeah.
What? Okay, no, I'm fine with it.
I like the way you made that statement up front. They kept everybody focused.
Keep it moving. All right, next up on the agenda as we change out here. Old business, case number 24-009, major subdivision, applicant owner Bentley Circle LLC, 163 Chester Turnpike, Candia, New Hampshire, property location Diamond Hill Road, Candia, New Hampshire, map 409, lot 228. He is looking to start doing, yeah, and note Linda Carroll is recusing herself and stepping off. He is looking for, I shouldn't call it a waiver, but a non-standard procedure to move forward with clearing and grubbing and the like. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kevin. You can introduce yourself for the record, Kev.
Good evening, Glenn. I'm Kevin Landry, the owner of Bentley Circle. Bentley Circle was a project we inherited after you guys, we purchased, after we voted in. Unfortunately, we're at a point where it's not as smooth as we were initially told that it was. It's my wife, Karis, and my son, Devin.
And Bentley.
Real quick, dear members of the board, Kenya Planning Board, on behalf of RG&H Construction, Bentley Circle, respectfully submit a request or permission, waiver, or required to allow limited site work to commence at Bentley Circle subdivision. Prior to formally submitting and recording the Mylar with the town and register of deeds. Specifically, we're requesting approval to begin non-structural, non-utility site work, only to include destumping, stripping of loam, stockpiling of the topsoil, or moving the boulders that are material on site to prepare them for crushing. There's massive amounts of surface nuggets on the property. No underground utilities, road construction, or building of construction will begin prior to Mylar being fully completed and approved. Respectfully submit the request due to unforeseeable circumstances and delays related to the Mylar. I have no problem throwing Josen Beach Engineering, the firm that initiated upon purchasing the property, informed us they are unable to sign the Mylar as they did not do the boundary and surveying. We found this out 3 Mondays ago this past week. We have a proposal from them to submit the Mylar to the state. And it was when I said, okay, Barry, we're dragging our feet. Let's get that Mylar presented. He informed me that he was unable to do it. My wife and I immediately started making phone calls, only to find out Hayes Engineering that did their surveying, the doors are closed. The gentleman called us from the emergency room with his deepest apologies. And the gentleman that was licensed in New Hampshire is no longer with them, and he has too retired. We have worked with James Vieira and Associates on 2 other projects, contacted them, asked them to help us. They do have Candy or office. They're working diligently as of now to certify that outer perimeter, to get our Mylar presented to the town and registry of deeds. This is something we initially thought we were going to be able to start August, September, maybe by October. And here we are, almost the first of the year. We put Jones and Beach on legal notice today. My attorney actually contacted them. Of course, he doesn't feel like he did anything wrong. And we have hired James Vieira to take over. So we're looking ultimately just to go in and start de-stumping, put the stumps in a pile so we can shear them, tub grind them, strip the soil, move the boulders, maybe hammer some of them, put them into a pile so that we can just get the ball rolling. I put in waiver. I understand through the recs, it might not have to be a formal waiver, but I like to do things right, ask permission, versus just go and do things and apologize for the inconvenience or even being here taking up your time.
So
it's not an unreasonable request.
Correct. As some very, very smart man said to me, you know, this is very extenuating circumstances outside of the control of the applicant. So that's why we're here tonight.
And I just want to note too, we've received all of our state permits. So I do believe AOT has already been submitted to the town, wetland subdivision, all of our state permits.
Right. I believe, Megan, we have all of the conditions have been met except the Mylar.
The surety is being cemented currently, but
so there is a bond in the works? Okay.
Yeah,
that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, so let's...
We've done everything. Yeah. This was a complete surprise.
The worst kind.
Yeah.
But I understand in the construction field that it's a necessary move on your half.
It absolutely is. And we were warned by the prior owner that Jones and Beach kind of took him for a bath. We asked for a written proposal from him. We received a written proposal for $21,800. And on the bottom last line was to present everything to the Registry of Deeds at the state of New Hampshire. When I asked for that, to date, we're at $52,000 in invoices. We've already paid him $12,000. He wants me to pay him another $41,000. And that does not include any of the work he's done for the last week. And when I've asked him how you can justify, here's your estimate, here's your invoicing, please give me a full description of this. He has no answer.
Now, so, the interesting thing from our, not the regulations, but from our site plan, our major subdivision and site plan regulations, so it's regulation, not ordinance, it says it cannot start construction or building any structures or putting in any roads without the Mylar.
Right.
But it doesn't specifically mention, you know, grubbing and clearing and all those types of things. Now, that's always been our SOP. Our standard procedure has always been you don't do anything until we get the Mylars and we have a pre-construction hearing. Okay? So we then talked to Steve, which is why he's still here. And, you know, talked about
what his thoughts were, and I'll let you speak for yourself, Steve. But we've
you're doing a good job.
All right, I'll pretend I'm your wife, and I'll speak for you. How's that?
Then I better speak. I'll never get a chance to again.
Well, we have talked about putting all the proper assurances of performance right. in place, including an surety bond, including a meeting with Keacher Nordstrom before he starts anything, and including approved
language,
erosion controls and site yeah. inspections and stuff like that. So that's all that's been kind of going on in the background here to see what, if anything, we could do, what impacts it has, and then as a board deciding whether or not we want to do it. But I didn't want to decide whether or not we wanted to do it unless we knew had everything in place that we could put in place. So that's that. And I know there's at least somebody who wants to do public comment.
Yes, sorry.
So, Linda, I will let you, and then we will discuss it. If anybody else wants to speak, just raise your hand.
Linda Carroll, 117 Diamond Hill Road. Great. Nice to meet you. As walking in the back there, and I did call DEP about, there is a spring. It's not really a vernal pool, and I know that's where the road's going. So to keep that going, and
I'm so sorry. When you say the back of the field or way in the back?
No, it's adjacent to ours. It's like right over the stone wall.
Yes, this is the wetland impact.
Yeah. So will the road, because the road's going right over that, it's also indicated on here.
Yes.
Will that look a little different than to be able to have that spring keep flowing? Will there be some type of drainage so that spring will keep going? Our neighbors are really afraid that it's not going to keep draining.
Specifically, the road is almost going to the right of that spring. It starts to turn and go down the hill.
Okay. Right. Yeah, because it looked like it was really adjacent.
Yeah, so this is actually all the wetlands, but this is actually more vegetation. The spring actually starts bubbling right here.
Okay.
There's a wall.
Yep.
Right at the end of that wall, that's where that spring starts to surface.
Okay.
A lot of this runoff is the lower, it's almost a pocket.
It's a pocket, and that's, yeah, all the trucks were going through. Because this was the only wet area in October in that whole piece of land.
Correct, and you can see it from there.
Oh, yeah.
So the road is actually almost coming down before and going this way.
Oh, okay.
So that's.
So it's still going to be able to keep. 100%. Okay.
And it's going to be sloped and graded, and
and
honestly, pulling the stumps. One of the biggest things, and I'm a huge when we grind the stumps, we take all the tub grindings and border everywhere we're working because it's the best natural silt fence.
Right.
And ultimately, it grows vegetation versus looking at a black flaggy,
Yeah. Well, that's what the loggers just kind of. Clear cut everything.
Well, unfortunately,
then all the
it cost us a lot of money to clean up
those
loggers did.
Oh, yeah.
And we still have a lot of cleanup. But we need a stump shear to clean up the disaster. They just went in and cut every tree that they could cut.
Yeah. And I mean, some right along our rock wall. Yeah. So now there's like no boundary because they could still see the stumps.
We sheared all that undergrowth and we have
a
part of cleaning up. There's a good month
of
cleaning up stumps. And then shearing them down to size to tub grinding them.
All right, so Steve, you want to add anything? Or are you good? Or
yeah, I mean, as I told you on the phone when you called me with a point, right? So the board understands. This project went through the approval process. It went through the fulfillment of the condition process. So the last step is to present final plans and Mylars to bring them into the building so that your chairman can sign them and they could get recorded at the registry. The consultants that did the project, different surveyor, Hayes Engineering from Massachusetts, and Jones and Beach, who you know from Stratton. Apparently Hayes had done the boundary for the prior owner. Mr. Landry bought the property from, and Jones and Beach relied on that to develop the subdivision plan that you approved. Well, as a matter of licensure, only the person who was responsible for the perimeter survey can stamp the plan that gets recorded. and apparently that person has retired and Hayes closed its door. No other land surveyor can stamp that plan without going around and verifying the boundary, and that's what he's got, I guess Vera is doing, right? Correct. So, 41 years I've been doing this. First time. I've heard that. Congratulations.
Kevin's been going, I'm number one. I'm number one.
It's not my first time being number one. So,
I understand, I was here at a meeting with you folks in September when I actually met Kevin the first time. And the reality is that he had an approved project then. And you bought an approved project, right? And after buying it, he's fulfilled the conditions. Well, the level of work that he seeks to do is no better time to do that than right now when the ground is frozen, right? By limiting the work to preparatory work, which, as he's indicated, he's got a lot to do. I don't see any, as long as the surety is in place, because what is the surety for? It's erosion control and restoration in the event of abandonment in the first.
Right.
That's the only concern we have. And I'd like to think, Tim, Megan, and I talked about about this situation, and that's why Tim brought it to the board, because we thought that was the correct thing to do. There is no, the word waiver got used. Well, waiver means it's contrary to your regulations. In this particular case, because of the fact that this is an odd duck, you have no regulation. It's just what is fair and equitable dispensation because of the problems that he has encountered. I didn't want to make the decision, and neither did your chairman. But I'm certainly hung around afterwards to recommend to you to make the decision to do the right thing and let him do the work that he wants to do while this other matter sorts itself out. And that will be the supervision of my office to the extent that's necessary at this early date, basically erosion control, and with surety in place before the work starts. Right. Does that make sense to you guys?
Exactly what I said. Yep.
It's just the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. I'll make the motion to allow Mr. Landon to continue the project based on surety bond being in place and with the regulations already with Keith watching and such.
I'll second that.
Okay. We're going to go reverse order. Kevin.
Yes.
Linda abstain. Dave.
Yes.
Brian.
Yes.
Tim. Yes. Mark.
Yes.
Judy.
Yes.
There we go. Make your move, bud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Yeah, I mean, it's something I could have done administratively, but
perfect time to get to do it.
Yeah, it's a tough
too bad you're now, 4 months off, but that,
right? It's been a challenge. Right? Thank you very much. You know, happy holidays to all of you.
Yeah, don't hang around. You get busy. Yeah.
My final question, just so I don't have to chase you all down with phone calls tomorrow. Can we schedule a site visit at your convenience, maybe before the holiday?
What do we need to look at that Jeff hasn't already
think,
seen?
I think it's just good to pre-construction maybe.
We did that, didn't we? Didn't you have a pre-con?
No, we haven't had a pre-con yet.
Okay. Why don't we schedule that for... I'm on a plane at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
It's 8:15.
So what are you doing at 5? What are you doing at 5?
What we're going to do is... Tim, do you need me for anything else?
No.
We're going to go have a conversation with Zerro from the building, him and I.
Okay. Yeah. And then, Jeff is his construction manager. You should probably reach out to him, too.
So we'll... We'll have a formal pre-con.
Thank you,
Tim.
Thank you, Jacob. Kev?
Thank you, Tim. Happy holiday.
Yeah, you too. Yeah.
We'll arrange a formal pre-con to go over things when he actually begins construction.
Yeah, I think it would be good for him and
you know,
the
Jeff,
to meet each other.
Jeff Quirk to have a phone conversation.
Not really. We've had a lot of conversation, but I mean, ultimately doing the stumps and grinding them, that's setting up all the erosion. It's just
I don't think anybody wants to watch you do that except for you. Take care.
Thank you. And
Merry Christmas. Have a safe trip.
And enjoy the house that you don't get to spend enough time in.
You have a wonderful planner here.
Machine is ready to speak to you.
I know.
Don't worry. Thank you. Enjoy your trip.
I think it's two. It is a condo.
Tommy had two lots.
He had two lots.
That's where he said it.
Yeah. Come on, Andy. So have you enjoyed the show?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what I wanted to do for the next hour or so.
Oh, yeah, right.
Talk about impact.
You got 20 minutes, dude.
You mean you're going to be here by yourself.
So I'll be brief, I'll, as brief as I can be. As you know, we've been working on an update of the solid waste impact fee and the development of a school impact fee. I have a draft solid waste impact fee update for you. You don't need to, obviously you're not taking action on this tonight, but I wanted to give you the draft and walk through it briefly. And I'll give one to Megan. Mm-hmm. So you have a solid waste impact fee in place right now. It's been in place since 2009. So this is the first update of your solid waste impact fee since June of 2009.
So it may be a little behind. It may be a little low.
Well,
a few inflationary numbers anyway.
Something's going up, something's going down. This is the update of the solid waste impact fee. I will just highlight a few things. I'm going to start on page 4. Page 4, figure 1, is the kind of summary of the impact fees that are calculated in the report. Single family detached, $933, and I'll walk through how we came to that number. That is...
That's a proposed fee, not that, the existing fee.
The existing fee is $912.
Wow.
Yeah. So $933 for a proposed.
Jesus, Nate, we spent all this time and effort and we didn't make any money.
Duplex is currently $820, proposed to be $759. Multifamily you don't have right now, proposed to be $620. And manufactured housing is currently $522. It's proposed at $720. So that one did go up. So you had a couple go up, couple go down. Part of the reason for that is the way that we derive the impact fees, and I'll walk through that, is we determine the capital cost of solid waste facilities per capita across the entire service population of the solid waste facility. I'll talk about what that means. We translate that to a per capita cost, and then to translate that per capita cost into a dwelling unit cost, we look at the number of people per average unit. And so in the town of Candia, there is an average of 2.62 people in a single family house, and 2.13 people in a duplex, and 1.74 people in a multifamily unit, and 2.02 people in a manufactured home. So that per capita cost is translated to a dwelling unit cost based on the number of people that live in each of those types of dwelling units on average in the town. So we highlight the town's population trends. 2020 census, you were at just over 4,000 people, 4,013 people. Looking out to 2030 and 2040, there is modest growth, I would say. 2040, the projected population in town is 4,478 people. That's not the drastic increase that you had seen in previous decades, right? So from 1950 to 2000, the town tripled in that 50-year period. But looking from 2000 to 2040, 40, modest growth.
And in 20 years, it's gone up 75 people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a few different reasons for that. The biggest reason, and I call it the natural decline of the aging population.
We're dying.
is we have an aging population. So there's two drivers of how population grows: births versus deaths, and people moving in and moving out, in migration and out migration. The town currently, or will over time, for the next little while, have more people dying than being born. That's just the nature of a lot of New Hampshire. We have an aging population.
Global demographics.
That was just up in the morning.
We do have people moving in. We do have people moving into New Hampshire, and that is keeping the in-migration is keeping the population figure growing slightly, but not at the levels that we had seen in previous decades. So looking out to 2040, 4,478 is the projected population. On page 5, we walk through what I just talked about, the number of average persons per different type of housing unit in town. That is derived from the U.S. Census, and it's also derived from a census product called the American Community Survey. The American Community Survey is done by the U.S. Census Department, but it is a large survey, and it's done more often in the interim years than the census. So we used the most current American Community Survey data for over a 5-year estimate from 2023. They haven't released the 2024 numbers yet. Then we look at what solid waste facilities the town has. And the solid waste facilities that you have are your transfer station and recycling center, along with its associated equipment and the site that it's on, all the access roads and et cetera that serve the site. That is part of the capital facility. And you also have a garage that's associated with the transfer station. It is used as a swap shop. Purpose of the swap shop is so that usable items don't enter the waste stream. You bring your usable item to the swap shop. You don't need it anymore, but maybe Tim does. So, you know,
how'd you know I go in there all the time?
Exactly. So really, those two facilities combined are the town's solid waste facilities. And if you remember previous impact fees that we've done, the key is to determine what the maximum service population of those facilities are. And to do that, we had to go back and look. And fortunately, from 2009, we knew this, that the town's transfer station and recycling center was built to serve, was based on a design from Lee, New Hampshire, and was built to serve a population of 6,700 people. That's its maximum service population. So theoretically, your transfer station should be able to serve the town until the town reaches a population of 6,700 people, and then you would need further expansion, which makes sense. You just built the facility in, 2008 it opened. 2007, yeah. Construction funding was committed. 2008, the facility was built. It will serve the town's needs for years to come. And so that means that the basis of the solid waste impact fee is what's called a recoupment basis. The town is invested already in this infrastructure that will serve population over time. An impact fee is to offset new growth, new development's proportional impact of that investment. So you've already built the capacity for future development. Now future, you're going to recoup that proportional cost with each unit that gets built. That's kind of the purpose of the impact fee. What is that cost? Well, we go to page 6. That cost was $1.5 million in 2007, which was actually bonded, a 10-year bond that was paid off in 2017. And then in 2011, the garage was built. Much smaller cost, $15,000 was the cost of the garage. I have translated those costs into current year dollars, adjusting for inflation. So that transfer station recycling center cost today would be $2.37 million. And the garage cost today would be $21,800. We have to issue a credit for any state or federal grants received, because we have to focus here on what the town's investment is in the capital facility. If the state or federal government put money in, or another grant entity put money into that, we need to issue a credit, because that's not part of the town's capital cost. And there wasn't much. There was a New Hampshire the Beautiful grant that supported some of the equipment at the original, in the time period that the transfer station was built. The value of that grant at that time was $5,000, which is $7,600 in today's dollars. So we did issue a credit for that. And that brings the total town's investment in today's dollars in solid waste capital facilities to $2.386 million. And so that is the cost that we then distribute across the maximum service population of 6,700 people that could be served by that. That becomes the cost per capita, which is then translated to a cost per unit based on persons per household. That, in a nutshell, is how we arrive at those figures. There hasn't been anything that I have been able to determine that has been an expansion of capacity of the transfer station since it was built, other than the swap shop. The only things that really have happened, some equipment has been replaced, kind of routine replacements. I generally am pretty conservative about not including replacements equipment in the capital cost for impact fees. I would include equipment if it was needed for expansion purposes. Like, we're getting so busy here, we need another telehandler that we, you know, that would be fair game, I think. But replacement of you know, equipment that's come out of service, that's I generally err on the side of not including that.
That's not capital improvement. That's just,
yeah. Everything in an impact fee is about new development's share of the capital cost. New development share.
Can I ask you a quick question? So yep. This is the impact fee that's assessed to new buildings being built.
This is, yes, it's this is specific. Because the transfer station is limited, the use of which is limited to Candia residents and is primarily for household waste, it is assessed to new residential development. So every time a new unit, a dwelling unit.
So in the case, just imagine it. Imagine there's a 48-unit elderly housing condo put in it's a condo. So condo fees would take care of all waste management stuff.
Would they typically, they do have their own. They don't impact that.
Right, would they be charged that fee?
No.
Okay.
So I a couple things. One is that, did we not have a person in town that was hauling garbage to our dump as a by picking up local residents' trash?
Yeah, I believe so. I can't say
yes,
matter of factly, but yeah.
Yes, Fred Marshy.
Yeah.
So it's completely possible that someone could do this in this new 48 unit. Thing is impacting our trash services. No. Not as likely.
No, I don't think so.
Wait, no, but this was being done in the past already.
Right, theoretically,
but at single family homes.
Right,
not,
they would do.
Right.
He was doing residential.
Not,
there.
Yeah, not
but
condos.
See,
condos have always had their
but,
own.
But see, these are, well, you know.
Right, but no. People,
how do we?
Yeah, but no. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Fred Marshy was paid. People paid him to go pick up your trash and your trash and your trash.
Yep.
At our
and
single family.
At
yep.
single
family.
And
yep.
haul it.
Yep.
But there's no difference in.
Would he bring it to our transfer station?
Yeah,
he would.
Yeah,
yeah, but he can only
yeah.
pick up in town.
Right.
Right.
And
yeah.
only single family residents, not condos.
Like,
condos have always been.
I'm surprised that they allow him to do that.
Why?
Yeah,
it's
you
a
pay him and you learn to.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, but then you don't get to talk to Nick and Joe.
That's all you're doing.
No, but if you show, you know, one of the. Solid waste wanted to come and dump it, you know, collect in town and dump it there. We wouldn't let them.
No, Oh, because they go all around. They
well,
don't
if, they,
do
if they had a truck only for candy.
They don't do that.
No, but if they did, would they
don't.
Let them do that? No, but okay, if they did,
yeah.
Would you let them do that?
I don't know.
I don't
That's not profitable for them. I don't think that even
no,
especially.
But I don't
yeah.
think it should be done. So I'm with you. But that's a separate question from this.
Yeah, so,
but the thing is here, like this, like if we look at this single family detached, okay, those 55 plus houses we just looked at are single family detached. The ownership is condominium.
Yeah,
they're single family detached.
They are single family detached.
Right. This doesn't state ownership. This just states structure.
Yeah, a lot
right?
of times condos, you know, they take a townhouse. It was hard to see because his pictures and stuff were pointed to you and not the audience. I was trying to peek around, but, you know, it looked and sounded like they would fit into a single family detached category. A lot of times condos are kind of townhouses where you have a shared
right.
wall
right.
and that sort of thing. Depending on how you define that sort of thing in your ordinance, it could be a duplex type of consideration. Often the shared wall, you know, might put it in the duplex category, but I got the sense
these are
single family detached.
Right. Ownership doesn't play into this. It's the structure.
Okay.
Right. So like a string of condos would be a multifamily, 3+ units.
So then they would be charged.
They would be charged even if they're not using it.
Okay.
It is a new dwelling unit.
Right.
Okay.
And that is the basis of the impact fee is a dwelling unit.
Yeah.
Oh, so they'll be getting an impact fee.
Yeah.
For a solid waste.
Oh, okay. When so these are already existent.
You already have a solid waste impact fee in place.
So they would.
This would be an update. These new figures that would go into place. It wouldn't be a drastic change
right.
to you know the what the town is currently charging. But what I guess what I would suggest is. You have a draft. I've kind of walked through it briefly here in the interest of time. Take a look at it over the next, you know, couple of weeks. You know, I know the holidays are here. Maybe, you know, let me know if you have any questions or comments about it. I think it's reasonably airtight, but if, you know, if questions or anything come up, let me know. Otherwise,
I'll call each of you the day after Christmas and make sure you read it.
Actually, I do have a question for Brian.
We won't answer the phone.
Quickly. Anyway, the question is, we just put in a bunch of work at the recycling center with paving, new, like, structures for sorting. I don't know what the cost was of that, but should that not be added into this cost?
Repaving existing infrastructure, not necessarily.
Okay.
If there was something, if there was an expansion of some sort, something new happened because that was necessary to
existing.
Yes.
Okay.
Basically,
replacements in kind, or you know, capital maintenance and things like that of in kind. But if
thank you,
I'll use the telehandler example again.
Yeah.
If we have one telehandler and it we can't handle the work anymore with just that one telehandler. Now we need to get another $75,000 telehandler because things are growing and we need that capacity. That sort of thing is what we would want to include.
Thank you.
I got a question for you just from a phasing scenario. How close are we on a school one?
Good question. Not that close. We have a lot of the pieces. There's one piece, and I don't want to bore you. There's one particular piece that when we talk here about the maximum service population, right, of 6,700 people, we have to do the same thing for the school. We have to determine what the maximum enrollment capacity is for the school. That's like a key piece of information.
Yeah, you were looking for that.
Back in your previous master plan, you reference a New Hampshire School Administrators Association report called the Assessment of Educational Facility Needs for the Henry W. Moore School. That, I know what that report would say, and it would have that specific figure that I'm looking for, which is the maximum enrollment capacity of the school. I have been on a wild goose chase to find this particular report. The school doesn't have it. The SAU doesn't have it. The superintendent's office doesn't have it. The New Hampshire School Administrators Association doesn't have it.
Wow.
I can't find it. And I've looked everywhere. And so now I need to go to Plan B to figure, I need to have an airtight enrollment capacity for the school. And the place where I would normally source that information exists, but exists in a place that nobody can find.
500 kids.
Well,
that's all it's built for.
Okay, that's good. I got to be able to substantiate that
right.
somehow.
Mark said.
Yeah.
Mark.
Yeah.
So in other words, he needs that from the school board.
Yeah, can you write a letter?
And that
I'm
may
not the
be.
Chair, I'm just the vice.
That may be where I end up having to do something. Like I may need to talk to Principal Wing and say, can you give me, in your professional opinion, the a number that I could use for the maximum enrollment capacity for the school? I will say I have everything else I need. Mm-hmm. I have all of the assessing data the school has given me, anonymized information about student enrollment K through 8 that I can match to the assessing data to determine what types of housing they live in. That's an important part of it. It's just really that one missing piece, and I may need to rely on the professional opinion of the administrators if they are willing to give me a figure for that. That figure exists in that report. I've seen many of those reports and used them in the past for other school impact fees. Chester had the same report from the same time, and I used that in their school impact fee, and it worked beautifully. And I thought I would be able to do the same exact thing because I know the report exists, but we can't find it anywhere.
Well, the reason I was asking just whether we should take action on this or wait. For
I don't think board. There's any reason to wait. You can put this. If you're comfortable, one, you're comfortable with it after you review it, the solid waste impact fee update, you can go ahead and schedule a hearing on that as a business item at any upcoming planning board meeting and put the updated one into effect. Right. I'm working on the school, but it may not be until early next year that I have a draft on that one. It just has been, it was an unexpected hiccup to not be able to track down that report. Mm-hmm. I have even contacted consultants that worked for the New Hampshire School Administrators Association.
Goodness.
At that time.
Bizarre.
and have not been able to track it down. So
sounds like your plan B will be a good.
Plan B is probably where I'm headed.
Yeah.
The school has been wonderfully responsive on everything else.
Yeah.
Everything I've asked for, they've given me. We just can't track that particular item down. Unfortunately. So
the other thing I wanted to fire out kind of to everybody is it came to my attention in the past couple of days that we should probably look at redoing the CIP and freshening it up, especially since, once we have the new fire chief in place, because we'll have a new police chief and a new fire chief.
Yeah.
It would be an opportune time in 2026 to update the CIP and stretch it out a little bit farther and get input from the new management.
You should, because it was last adopted in March of 24, so you definitely will want to try to do that sooner than later.
Yeah, and then Jeff can just tack a few more years.
You got a really good base to build upon.
Yeah, it's just that's just it.
I have sent Amy all the forms and everything long time ago, so it shouldn't be too hard maybe to do that solicitation from if you wanted to go.
Yeah, we'll just wait on the new chief, the new fire chief.
But in terms of the solid waste one, once you review it and you're happy with it, and if there are any questions, I can address those. But once you're happy with it, you can put it in place anytime.
Okay.
There's no reason to wait.
Sounds good.
Then just do the school one when it's ready. I'm working on the school one, but it's
you're working
it's been,
hard.
It's
too,
been
obviously.
It's been a
man. That's
it's been a more of a goose chase than I anticipated for that one. But we'll get there. I appreciate your patience with that one.
Well, and we appreciate your patience of wading through that
protracted.
Nate, when you talked to Becky, ask her to see if the engineering firm that looked over the school.
I have that report. They did send me that report.
Okay.
But and that's a really good report of like the school building itself,
mm-hmm.
and issues with the school building itself. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't give me that maximum enrollment capacity figure.
That should be an easy.
I know, like how many rooms do you have that are really rooms?
Maybe at, you know.
Not closets or anything.
Do the teachers have a contract that says maximum student amount?
There are certain standards that school administrators apply in terms of square footage per classroom, square footage per kid, and different grades, different needs, that the Moore School may or may not have elements of or other elements of, and, you know, it's not my, you know, not my particular area of expertise, which is why I rely on the experts that do reports like that particular report, but I may need to, like I say, rely on Principal Wing's knowledge.
Have her look into the air capacity for that, because that'll probably tell you what we can do since the COVID.
Okay.
Good one.
I will reach out to her. I'm definitely going to be reaching out to her again, and I'll have that conversation with her. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll get there. It's just, I just want to make sure that when I give you a draft, that it's as airtight as it can be.
Right.
You know, there's no holes in it. There's no, you know, that every number and every figure there, I can substantiate with something that's rock solid to the best of my ability.
Sounds good.
That's what we like about it.
Well, drive home safe.
Hey, thank you.
And I'm gonna say we forego approval of minutes at this point since we're over 2 hours in, unless somebody really wants to approve
the
minutes.
You can do it really quickly.
I know, I didn't see anything wrong.
I think my name misspoke a couple times on that one.
Oh, really?
A-Y, and it should be E-Y.
Oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. Your name?
Yeah, I mean, those kind of things jump out if your name is...
And you saw something else?
No, that was it.
That was all I saw.
I know, the rest is AI.
Motion to approve the minutes of November 19th.
Is it there?
I'm sorry, yeah, the first one is E-Y.
Enjoy your holidays.
All right, Nate. Yeah, Merry Christmas.
There's A-Y.
Goodbye, Kathleen.
Yeah, I guess
it's
used interchangeably.
Yeah, it goes
EYAY. Yeah.
Okay, so we
got second
emotion. All those in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
See, that was easy.
That's easy. Done. All right, next motion.
I have one question. This document that was in the stack stuff about a driveway DOT thing, I can't find it correlating to anything else.
I saw it, but I didn't get to it because it didn't come up. So
0.105 miles west of Main Street on the south side of the answer 43. I'm trying to place that. And if I don't, it's not in the agenda as far as a thing.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah, driveway permit.
That must be for Scott's.
No. Oh. Landowner Craig St. Pierre, A1 Ventures.
I apologize. I must have just accidentally put that in there. And I had the wrong paying attention. It's kind of a crazy couple.
Sorry,
I get
first
thought.
Oh,
Craig. I make a motion to ignore that piece of paper.
Okay.
I second it.
But the location is where approximately one-tenth of a mile southwest of Main Street.
Yeah. Well, Main Street goes...
Main Street goes right across.
They're right in the corner there, yeah.
It does sound like Scott's place.
It is.
No,
Scott.
Craig's.
First stop.
First stop.
A1 that's
Ventures.
First stop.
Oh, yeah, because Main Street comes back out there.
I
yeah,
that
yeah,
has,
yeah.
That has to do with the solar
field.
Yeah,
it's for the solar.
Yep.
It's for the solar field. Yeah.
I was thinking Main Street. Just
I know Vargo right there.
Right? Yeah. No, that comes back out and goes and turns. Yeah. Got it. Okay.
So we don't really.
All right, I'll take a motion.
I think we did it already.
No, to adjourn, we did not.
To adjourn. I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Good.